President Donald Trump gets to work on changing America on day one.
The United States will once again consider itself a growing nation, one that increases our wealth, expands our territory, builds our cities, raises our expectations, and carries our flag into new and beautiful horizons.
Better prepared and with the wind at its back, what the Trump administration hopes to do.
And I think that Donald Trump, with, 196 executive orders yesterday, is really changing the culture in Washington, D.C.
Today is Tuesday, January 21st, and this is The Issue from VOA.
I'm Scott Walterman.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London.
The first item that President Trump is signing is the rescission of 78 Biden-era executive actions, executive orders, presidential memoranda, and others.
President Donald Trump got right to work upon his return to the White House on Monday, announcing numerous executive actions on top-line issues like immigration and energy development, and in his inaugural address, promising to expand U.S. territory all the way, he said, to Mars. We hear more from VOA's Anita Powell reporting from the White House.
On this historic first day of his second term in office, President Donald Trump laid out his vision for a bolder and larger United States.
The United States will once again consider itself a growing nation, one that increases our wealth, expands our territory, builds our cities, raises our expectations, and carries our flag into new and beautiful horizons. And we will pursue our manifest destiny into the stars, launching American astronauts to plant the stars and stripes on the planet Mars.
Then he got to work, signing a stack of executive orders. He said they include a declaration of a national emergency at the southern border that would allow the deployment of troops, and a national energy emergency that will allow more domestic extraction. He also declared that there are only two genders, and said he would order that the Gulf of Mexico be renamed the Gulf of America. Historians say that Trump made history by using what is historically a unifying speech to portray a future that many Americans may disagree with. University of Texas history professor Jeremy Suri spoke to VOA from Austin via Zoom.
It was less an inaugural speech and more a State of the Union. He just listed a series of bullet points of projects he wanted to undertake, from deporting immigrants to seizing back the Panama Canal.
Thousands of Trump supporters came to Washington from across the country because they say his policies speak to them. Melanie Vohl is a resident of Cleveland.
Common sense, the bringing back of common sense out loud. So many people have in my position feel like we are the silent majority. And I think this is going to give us the opportunity to speak out loud and to be, you know, and unafraid to speak the truth and to speak common sense.
Shortly after his inaugural, Trump spoke to a smaller group of supporters in the Capitol and reiterated claims that the 2020 election was totally rigged, a claim without proof. He also alluded to his plans to pardon some of those convicted over the violent events of January 6, 2021, when a mob of Trump supporters attempted to disrupt the certification of the election won by Joe Biden.
And I think this was a better speech than the one I made upstairs, okay? I think this was better, J.D., I think this was much better.
Some of Trump's powerful supporters expressed their joy.
This is what victory feels like. Yeah!
CEO Elon Musk was among the billionaires in the Capitol Rotunda for the ceremony. Consumer advocacy groups are sounding alarms about some of the new president's quieter moves that seek to loosen regulations and, they say, benefit these elite few. Lisa Gilbert is co-president of the nonprofit consumer advocacy organization, Public Citizen.
When we think about why the incoming Trump administration wants to freeze regulations and halt public protections wholesale, it is at the behest of the wealthiest among us, corporate special interests. You know, they are who benefits when we don't have guardrails on the books. You know?
Historians and analysts say it's not clear how many of Trump's day one actions, which his officials say number more than 100, will fly when challenged legally. For that answer, they say, look to tomorrow. Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
So, I mean, there's no doubt that they were prepared to take over at 12 noon on the 20th of January, signing a record number of executive orders covering everything from withdrawing from the Paris Climate Accord, pulling out of the World Health Organization, declaring an emergency on the southern border.
Right. It's just like anything else. You've done the job once and you come back stronger and more able to figure out how to do things more effectively and quicker. And that obviously appears to be the way it's going.
No doubt. One of the knocks on the first Trump administration was a disorganized chaos. That is not the case this time.
Absolutely. Well, let's get some insights into the bigger picture here on what Trump hopes to achieve this time around. Joining us is Republican strategist Matt Klink with Klink Campaigns.
So thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Great.
So usually a second swearing in for a president's fairly low key. Of course, this time there was a four-year gap between the first term and the second, and it was a pretty high-energy affair. He got right down to business. Can you give us a big-picture overview of what you think the Trump administration wants to accomplish?
Absolutely. So I think that, there is a renewed energy from Donald Trump. It's almost like – it's not like a new first term, but it's not – as old as a second term. There is this new energy and new sense of, you know, if Washington, D.C. is ever going to change, now is the most opportune time for Donald Trump and his supporters to do it. His remarks in the Capitol Rotunda yesterday, they were not typical of remarks of an incoming president or a recently sworn in president. I think what you saw more accurately was someone who really went out of his way to try to tarnish even more than it already is in the public eye, not only the Biden-Harris legacy, but also just entrenched Washington, D.C., that, you know, the rest of the country may be struggling, but Washington, D.C. never loses. And I think that Donald Trump, through that speech and then coupled with, 196 executive orders yesterday, is really changing the culture in Washington, D.C. And the classic example is the executive order removing the security clearance of the 51 intelligence officials who got very political when they said that the Hunter Biden laptop was classic Russian propaganda, when we now know that it wasn't. And he even then went after John Bolton and removed his security clearance. These deep staters, that's how they make their living, by trading on information. And now they no longer have access to that information. So that's one symbolic measure. But again, we can talk at great length about, you know, the raft of other executive orders that he signed yesterday.
So executive orders, I have a twofold question here. Are they basically a statement of how a president wants the government to be managed? And is that sort of a statement as to where this is headed and where they see their administration headed?
Oh, well, there are a couple messages. So one of the first executive orders he signed was he invalidated all 78 of Joe Biden's executive orders. So, again, a clear break with the past on one hand. On the other side, they focused around a couple major tranches. One is on immigration, which he campaigned hard on, and it wasn't the top issue, but it was a top two issue in the November elections. The other issue was in reining in an out-of-control government. He's going to force all of the workers to return to the office. A number of them will likely leave because they've moved out of the Washington, D.C. area since COVID. And third is he, what he said during his speech, drill, baby, drill. America is going to return to an all-of-the-above energy policy, which, frankly, we should have because we are in energy competition with China. And he withdrew from some global governing bodies that no longer worked to the United States' advantage and were ill-advised to begin with. So in a sense, they do set direction, but they also have the effect of law. Obviously, they're not as durable as legislation that's run through Congress, and they can be wiped out with the stroke of a pen by whomever comes next. But I think that what Donald Trump did yesterday was really signal that what's gone on in the past is not going to go on in the future.
Let me ask you a question. It's a serious question. It's not a, frivolous question or a political question.
Oh, come on, Scott.
All right, maybe a little. No, no, really.
We're teasing.
Why do you have to fabricate fact? Like, drill, baby, drill. It made me think of it. We're already drilling more than ever before in the history of the country, and we're drilling more than any other country in the world. You want to drill more, why don't you just say, I want to drill more, as opposed to framing it as changing a losing, it's not true.
Well,
the
Scott,
same thing is true with the pardons for the January Sixers, right? You want to pardon them? You're the president, your prerogative. But Heritage put out a news release yesterday saying it was a peaceful protest and they were unfairly the victims of a weaponized justice system. Just pardon them. Why do you have to make up the story?
Well, I guess Scott, he could always lie about it like Joe Biden did for 4 years and say he wasn't going to preemptively pardon anybody or pardon Hunter Biden. Look, you asked two separate questions. One on J6, I think it's an effort by Donald Trump to put the Capitol riots behind us and to move forward. I know that the mainstream media loves to harp on that.
No, I get it. Again, you're the president. You have the power to pardon. But it wasn't a peaceful protest.
As we saw in November, the country was a riot. As we saw in the during the campaign, the country's moved on for J6. If the Democrats and the mainstream media want to waste their time talking about J6 for the next 4 years, good luck to them. The Republicans will then have supermajorities in the Senate, and they'll pick up 40 more House seats. America is ready to move on, and by pardoning the people that were, some of whom were probably fairly tried and convicted, but others who certainly weren't, who were just there, I think it's a way for Trump to move on. Now, again, he said he was going to do it, unlike Joe Biden, who lied to the American people for 4 years and then did it, especially the last one, 20 minutes before he left office. But again, the mainstream media will, of course, toe the line and bow to the Democrat will, because they're literally an arm of the Democratic National Committee.
Well, you know, that
the other question,
not true.
The other. Oh, come on, Scott. It is overwhelmingly true. Look at the, and then going back to the energy thing, look, that's just basic communication style. Politics and hyperbole go hand in hand. And it's a lot sexier to say drill, baby, drill than it is to say, yeah, we're going to drill more. And the whole point being is that during the Biden-Harris administration, we shut down drilling. We lost opportunity to capitalize on more drilling opportunities that exist. America is a resource-rich country. I mean, look, Joe Biden banned natural gas sales. And guess what? Europe was buying Russian natural gas while we're at the same time we're fighting Russia and Ukraine. So, again, there's hypocrisy to go all around here. All Donald Trump is saying is that America is going to be the world's preeminent energy supplier, and we will continue to do the renewables when it makes sense. But as you know, renewables are an intermittent source of power. And until that happens, we are reliant on petroleum products, oil and natural gas.
Well, what if the world is building more jobs for clean energy and that's the way of the future?
Is it?
The world environmentalists can't survive without... are saying that we must reduce our use of fossil fuels quickly.
The world cannot live without fossil fuels. That is a hard fact that the environmentalists may want to, you know, have everybody have their solar and the wind. It's never going to be possible. China is building 100 coal-fired power plants this year. So you can get idiots like John Kerry talking about China's commitment to green energy. China is committed to energy, period.
And that's what America needs to do. We're no longer using coal to a great extent. And we, whatever we do, whether it's oil refining or natural gas production, we do it the cleanest of any country in the world. But we would be foolish, just look at Germany as an example, we would be foolish to stop using and producing petroleum products. One, it's a source of great energy. And two, our economy and the world's economy is incapable of surviving without it.
So I guess that's where I'm confused. So we're painting the picture that the Biden administration was shutting down petroleum production, but was drilling more than ever before.
No. First of all, the Biden administration doesn't drill at all. The private sector
drilling was, but drilling was at an all-time high during the Biden administration. Nobody was
No. That's not an accurate statement, Scott. Production was at an all-time high based on what's existing, but no new exploration and no new production was coming online. Which, if you know anything about the energy industry, you're always continuing to explore and produce new wells so that you can have production in the future. Biden also banned natural gas exports. Although if you listen to what Mike Johnson said recently, Biden was so out of it in a conversation that he didn't even know that someone in his administration had done that. So again, the Biden administration had one of his first executive orders that he signed in 2017 was to stop the Keystone pipeline. And with that, what, 100,000 plus jobs for that pipeline? So again, the Biden administration had a clear bias against energy, and Trump is removing that bias and allow America to reach its full potential from an oil and gas exploration, production, and export possibility.
I have a question about executive orders.
Yes.
What are there limits to the power of executive orders? Do Congress and the courts potentially have the ability to block things? And will there be fights on some of these?
Well, Congress can do it. I mean, look, the power of the proper way to make law is through, you know, a piece of legislation passed through both houses of Congress, which is then signed by the president. There will certainly be some executive orders yesterday. I would imagine the one on ending birthright citizenship that will be challenged in the courts. And again, I have to believe that Donald Trump feels pretty good about, given the current makeup of the courts, if you go all the way to the top court in the land, of where that issue may end up. But no, of course, I mean, you know, again, you're three co-equal branches of government.
And to be fair about birthright, they're not outright banning birthright. They're ending the practice of birthright tourism, where people sell packages, by the way, just again,
which they do, because I know people who have done it.
Right, where you come to the United States, have the baby, at a hotel. Well, you stay in a hotel. You
I
go
didn't
to
hear
a doctor,
that part. I just heard
and then
him
you,
say.
Yeah, if you read the executive order, to be fair to the administration, they think that's going to hold up in court because the original intent, they say, of the law was.
Yeah, all I heard him say was, exactly, we're ending birthright citizenship. I didn't hear
it. Yeah, they're not ending it. They're restricting it. Gotcha. But
correct. Well, I've heard it positioned by some in the news media about ending birthright citizenship. So, yes.
So
no,
I guess
I
that's really
that
the
is.
Next question, Matt, is, we're not being nuanced in situations that need to be nuanced. It's us against them, them against us. That's not productive. Both sides.
Well, Scott, I wholeheartedly agree with you. I will tell you, though, the Lake and Riley Act passed with 63 votes out of the United States Senate, which I think highlights, one, the Democrats realizing that they got destroyed in November because their uber progressive position on immigration was out of step with the vast majority of Americans. And it does highlight that when an issue, albeit it becomes politically costly, it does spur some bipartisanship to occur. So I think that in and of itself is a net positive. But look, I mean, we're, you know, our system is designed to to have, you know, the different sides squabble against each other, and change ultimately comes very slowly in America. That is until at least the Democrats get back in control of everything and they remove the filibuster, as they're threatening to do. But that was the whole point of the founding fathers, was that government would make changes slowly, and the Senate was supposed to be the saucer to cool the tea. And, you know, and we fight and we argue, but change is made around the margins. And, you know, right now the pendulum had swung too far to the left under Biden and Harris administration, and America wants to right that, literally and figuratively, right that ship and move America back toward center or center right. But America at its heart is a center right country.
And what do you think the role and the influence will be of Elon Musk?
A couple of different ways. I think that one, he will spur Trump to pursue some really cool things like a manned exploration of Mars. I think that he will have an outsized influence on the Department of Government Efficiency, better known as DOGE. And I think that if he's successful in doing that, that the Trump administration will go down in history as one of the most successful of.
Hmm. Matt, would love to talk to you more. I know you got stuff to do. We'll talk again in the future. Thanks for the perspective.
You got it. Thanks a lot.
All right. I appreciate you both.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Republican strategist Matt Klink.
You know, I did a little fact-checking on the thing that Matt said about drilling, that President Biden had canceled a bunch of drilling and had not approved drilling, and drilling was, and exploration was, the key to oil production. According to the Department of the Interior, the United States Department of the Interior, President Biden approved 50% more gas and oil drilling permits for wells on federal land since taking office during the first Trump administration, first 3 years. And so, you know, Trump has sought to cast Biden's climate and clean energy policies as choking off U.S. oil and gas, the production of U.S. oil and gas. But the output of both of those fuels reached record levels last year. And so when I asked him, I don't understand why it's your right to make the policy you guys are in charge. Why do you have to lie about it? Like in January 6th, where I said, why is it being cast as a peaceful protest? And Matt immediately pivoted to, we just want to move on from January 6th.
Right.
Sure. Okay. Let's move on. And you can pardon whoever you want. He's the president. But why do you have to say it was a peaceful protest? It was not a peaceful protest. Let's move on. They always pivot away. And then, when all else fails, like Matt did, you blame the media, right? Oh, it's the mainstream media just calling us out constantly for stuff that we didn't do.
Right.
They used to do that when I covered the Clinton administration.
Everybody needs a scapegoat, Scott.
Right. Well, yeah. That's what I'm pointing out, is that, you know, the media is not the scapegoat. The Clinton people used to say the same thing. Why are you always on us? Why are you always?
Yeah, I think even President Biden wasn't always happy with the media either.
The media called him out for after the debate.
Right.
We're on him all the time about, whoa. You know, what's going on? Anyway, in their defense, they won the election. They took all seven swing states. They got the popular vote. They have the mandate to do what they want to do. No one that I know is arguing that point. I just asked the question.
Absolutely. And they definitely have hit the ground running, as we said earlier. It was a lot. I don't recall an inauguration day of a president being so, you could even say productive,
And he's a great showman.
I mean,
The opening up the books at the rally.
And then at the parade, throwing out the pens.
No, it was great. I mean, he gives them what he knows how.
But it was also a lot
to
of
make a show out.
It was also a lot of things that he had promised on the campaign.
That's right.
That he was
delivered on day one,
signing, as we said, a record number of executive orders.
And he's really good at he's really good at the show.
Right.
You know, playing to the base.
That's why so many people are drawn to him.
That's right.
But, as far as all of these issues, there's so many. You know, we heard about the Paris Climate Accord pulling the U.S.
It's like trying to drink out of a fire hydrant.
Taking the U.S. out of the World Health Organization. We're thinking, what do we cover? Because there are so many things. And obviously, he has a big agenda. And, second time around, you're much more prepared and going to get things done faster and very motivated. And so it's going to be a busy time and a lot of things to talk about.
You've been listening to The Issue from the Voice of America.
On behalf of all of us here at VOA in Washington and around the world, we thank you so much for taking the time to listen to us.
And you can follow The Issue on X, Blue Sky, and Facebook at VOA The Issue. And for news 24/7, go to our website, voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.